Welcome everyone to a new chapter of the Calisthenics Insider Podcast. More guests, more topics, more value for your workout. And we're starting off with a really good interview with Viktor Kamenov, who is sharing his story about his recent injury that nearly ruined his whole career.
How is it possible this thing to happen? Because I was doing it so many times and I felt like in my best shape.
He's sharing about how it happened and how you can avoid it in your workout. Let's start into the interview.
I've been talking with so many athletes, even gymnasts, because this is an injury that is so common to gymnasts. And they were telling me, oh, man, be careful, because, you know, this is an injury that comes when you least expect. Yeah, like you can feel like you're in your best shape. You go down and suddenly it comes. And it comes in, from a skill that I've done so many times and not from a progression that I haven't done before. So I went for Zanetti, you know, which is the Maltese, two back lever position. And over there, suddenly one of my shoulders just dropped. You know, I felt like something, you know, it's breaking inside me. Yeah. But I started after that looking at what are the causes of that thing, you know, because it's really important to really look at the causes of some problems that happened in order not to have them again. Yeah. And in fact, there it's a mixture of a lot of things, you know. So we need to start from, let's say, the bigger picture, which is more about the overall program that I used to have. And unfortunately, because of all my travels I used to have around the world, my training program was not really consistent. I remember I was keeping even like 5 trainings on the rings because I couldn't have rings always with me. So I had not so consistent training program. Then after that, if we need to go deeper and deeper and go to actually the execution of the move, I remember that I did it a little bit faster. So it's not even about the progression that you're getting, but it's about how you're executing it. So you can get even a progression it's pretty easy for you. So in my case, it was a resistance band that with which I could do 2-3 repetitions without a problem. Yeah. But I went too far, too fast, too aggressive into that move with a straight arm. And of course, that led to that injury because it's about also the velocity, how you're actually going to that, move. Yeah. And it's really important for all those strength dynamic skills to also think about the velocity, how we're doing that thing, because that can make a big problem after. So that's why it's really important. It's not only about one thing. It's a mixture of a lot of things. So first you need to start from the general program. If it's structured well, good. If you're consistent into that thing, because I had a really well structured program that I unfortunately couldn't do 100%. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons. Yeah. Then after that, if you need to go deeper, you need to go day by day. You need to go for the exercises, specific exercises that you're doing. How many sets? How many reps? What are the progressions? And then after that, once you have that progression, which in my case, it was pretty good, you're looking about the execution, how you're executing that thing. Yeah. And also there are some additional things to that thing, which is the nutrition, which of course I can say that, again, the past month, it was not like it was not the best possible. And also something else is dehydration. In summer, I remember that I was not drinking water at all. And usually when you're not hydrated good, you're way more open to this type of injuries. Yeah, the tendons are way more open to have damage like this. Yeah. And you see, in the end, it's a mixture of a lot of things, you know, but it's important to really analyze what's happening, whatever the injury is, because this is my biggest injury. I used to look at those things before. I remember having inflammations, but it was not such a big deal. I was thinking that it's a big deal, but after having this one inflammation, it's already nothing. Yeah. But basically, this happened. And after that, I hardly found a surgeon to make the operation. Because it's a vacation, just like we talked before the call. And I had some struggles, like finding a surgeon. Like I needed 2 weeks to find a surgeon because, if I delay it even more, it was going to be late. Yeah, so I had to really make it as fast as possible. And after that, they made a surgery. I was not moving my hand till like a few days ago. And currently I started moving it, like doing some, basic work. And probably in around 2 to 3 months, I'll be able to be back in the battlefield and, start with the easy stuff, with the resistance band, with just the dips, with just the push-ups. And it's important over here to really look at it more professional and not rush the process. I mean, if somebody's telling me, even the professionals are telling me that I need 2 months, I'll probably take 4. I think that's the smartest way. Yeah.
And will you be back at your old strength?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Look, there are two ways in which you can look at the injury. Like the way which is the negative one, like the injury that ruined my career, you know, you can look at it that way, or you could look at it at the positive way, which is the injury that gave me the experience to really not face this type of problems in the future, you know, to face the problem in the when I'm still young and when I can still rehab fast, or to face the problem that will make me a better coach, like to be the only coach that is with a torn biceps, let's say it that way. So there are two ways to look at the situation, or you can even look at it like it, the injury that gave me the time to deal with so many other things that I couldn't find time to do, to improve and so on. Yeah. That's whatever funny. Happened, it already happened. You know, it's a destiny. You should accept it, but also you should take it as a lesson to know how to continue further. Yeah.
That's true. That is it. Just how you deal with it. And I know that, I just have to remember how we met in Madrid, 1 year ago. And you were also like really already traveling a lot. You, 1 weekend in Italy, 1 weekend in, wherever, like you're like traveling around every weekend, giving workshops, giving coaching. So, it's a lot of stress for the body as well. And I was always impressed on how you still manage to get your workouts in and keep your level and even progress. But in the end, as you said, multiple things add up, dehydration, traveling, stress, maybe not concentrated, being concentrated, being too fast, whatever. And then, this happens.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. You said it. You said it good.
Mm-hmm. So, you said it's about taking the right lesson from it. I think your students will profit from it. The more you analyze the situation, the more you learn from it, the more you rehabilitate as well. But what are the next steps now? What is your plan?
Well, a lot of plans, but since it's a sport interview, let's focus on that. And my major plan right now is a good rehabilitation. That's one of my major goals, which is in terms of, my sport career, let's say it that way. And so I'm mainly focusing right now on, getting better coach experience, getting way more in depth all those topics, you know, not just practical, but more like theory. And, basically that thing is in terms of the coaching part. Yeah, in terms of course, competing, we'll see after that how it will be. It's just, really, really fast forward in the future. I don't want to think about it right now. It's not even a goal so much right now, yeah. I'm thinking of it realistically, and it's about small steps that I need to take, you know. I know there is a direction, but I don't want to be really specific for the goal. I know the direction. That's important, yeah.
That's nice. So I saw under your post about the injury, you also explained to the people, how it gets fixed, and with this animation, how it gets reattached to the bone, I think the tendon, right?
Yes.
And you also talked that you have gymnast friends and gymnasts who have the same injury. Question, is it unavoidable? Is it something that everybody is in danger who is doing calisthenics on a really high level to have this kind of injury? Or are there ways to get rid of it fully?
Well, first, everybody's in danger, that's for sure. But definitely it's avoidable. Definitely it's avoidable. Yeah, that's the thing. And, you know, it's some of the things that sometimes I'm getting to the back and I'm thinking okay, what could be different? You know, it could be way different. Yeah, I'm accepting the fact that it could be way different if I did, for example, this and this and this. If I was, let's say, more focused into my trainings instead of other things and so on. Because as you said, the more things you handle, the harder it is to actually manage them. And if you're aiming to be a professional athlete, you need to be professional athlete and your full focus to be over there. Like if you want to compete and you want to be the first guy over there or top three, you definitely, your full focus should be over there, not on, let's say, so much on business stuff, so much on coaching stuff, so much on traveling, because in the end you find way less time and your focus is outside the sport zone, outside your competing career, let's say it that way. Yeah, but definitely it's avoidable. And as I said, you need to look at first the bigger picture, how you're planning your training program, then you need to go deeper and deeper and be sure that everything is fixed, because you can have the bigger picture really good fixed. Let's say it that way. You have a really good training program. I know guys that were following a really good training program, but the small things that they were doing inside the training, for example, sometimes, you know, going for progressions that they're not ready and so on, can lead to injury and problem. Or also the opposite thing is possible. You know, you're going pretty reasonable into your trainings, like each of the attempts are chosen, but your overall structure of the program is missing, like you're missing the direction. Yeah, and that's also a problem. Like it's in general, like all the things in general in life. For example, you can have a good direction, but if every day you're doing bad choices, then you're not going to go through that direction. Or the opposite thing, like every day you can try to be really strict into some things, but if you don't have a good direction, then it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm. How do I find the right direction?
How to find the right direction? That's a hard topic. I mean, for the majority of the people, I see even to 25, even 30 years old people, I see how they're without any direction. Some people are without direction for all their life. Yeah, I think I already found my direction way long ago. Yeah, but, you know, it's something that is really subjective, depending on a person. And it's really philosophical and it's maybe a little bit away from the topic of this interview. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. But it's still like, because we both know that the sport is a big part of our personal development. It's like part of our personality and our life these days. And I feel that a lot of athletes out there are running around without direction in their lives. So this is why I was thinking, like, how did you find your way? When did you know, hey, this is my road to go, my plan to follow?
Yeah, I get it. In fact, majority even of the calisthenics athletes, you see that they're doing the sport just like a side work. You know, it's not something like really, really important part of their path. I see even on the playgrounds a lot of kids who are just going for calisthenics, just like they're going for football or for something else. You know, that's part of the path, because you need to try a lot of things before choosing one. Yeah, and to see in which one you're having a privilege compared to the others, because you can have a privilege in accordance to many things. For example, physical qualities. You can be, let's say, light, and you can be not so tall. You know, this is still a privilege. So it shows that, okay, you know, this is something that you can choose, you can go for. Mentality. Not everybody has a mentality to continue long term. I see guys who are really motivated for a year, and then after that motivation drops, like they don't have any discipline to continue and so on. So that's also really important part, like having the discipline and to have the character to, you know, to strive for that long time. You know, and to pick it as a goal, or to pick it as something that is having a really big influence on your life. Yeah. But that's one of the problems. And, you know, it's also in other areas in life, you see a lot of guys, you know, still not sure whether it's this is the direction or other is the direction. You just need to try and see what are your best qualities. And if you feel that this thing is not for you, just don't go for it. I mean, there are a lot of guys who are, let's say, trying different sports in which they don't feel themselves. This is the part, but they're over there just because of the social group or some other factors. That's really big factor. Many athletes are doing, many guys are doing certain things because of the social part, not because of the thing itself. It's important to go for the things itself. Just like me. I mean, the recent years I've been training mainly alone because I enjoy the sport. You know, I want to be over there fully devoted to the sport. It's not so much about, you know, talking with the others. It's also this. Yeah, let's say it that way. It's also this, but it's not the main focus. I'm not over there for the community. That's, let's say, the community is important for part for improving the sport in general. But if we're talking about individual goals, we need to be definitely specific in our trainings, and we need to be individual into our trainings. That's important part. And that's why our sport is individual, just like the gymnastics, just like some other, let's say, fighting sport is individual. It's you versus you.
Yeah. That's maybe also the difference between motivation and discipline. If you're disciplined and if you're like really focused on the sport itself, you train also alone. And I see a lot of people, let's call them the average gym guys. They go train when they have an appointment, when they want to go with their friends, but they don't go alone. They don't go when it rains. They don't go when it's holidays and then there is the difference. This is the difference between the professional athletes and the ones who take it serious and the ones who just do it for fun.
Absolutely. I can say that this is a huge sign of that shows if this thing is for you or it's not for you. If you do it for the thing, specifically for the thing, then that's your part. If you do it for some outside factors that are not so much connected with the sport, like the social group, it means that you're not doing it for that. You're doing it for a social group. And, you know, if something happens with the social group or the other factor, whatever it is, you just change the sport or you just change the direction, which is definitely not a good thing, especially if you're already 30, 35. I mean, there is no time to do such a thing. You definitely need to find your stuff. Yeah. Sure. And also in this type of situation, just as I told you, there is no time for depression. There is no time to be negative and to say, oh, how that thing is possible. You need to accept it. There is no time. You need to accept it just from tomorrow to start looking positive of the world and to see what advantages you can get from the situation that you're right now.
That's it. And that's what I always tell everyone. Like, for example, your car breaks down and you can't go to an appointment, but you don't know, you never know what would have happened if your car wouldn't have break down. Maybe you would have had a worse accident and stuff.
Yeah.
You never know what this is for. Maybe this is like the breakthrough for your coaching career because you have so much time with yourself, that you have like an idea that you didn't think about before. So you never know what the good thing is. And maybe the whole biceps could have ruptured and like the whole, like you never know. And maybe
it could be way worse. There's always a reason of the things, you know, there is always a reason. Something happened for a reason. Yeah. We should think that way.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But how do you handle the upcoming trips? I see that you're like really,
I canceled a few trips. Also, you remember I canceled the trip that I had with Garnation because of the situation. Yeah, but it is how it is. I mean, for 1 month, I'll be in Bulgaria just to, you know, stabilize the situation. And then after that, I continue by the usual way. It's good that when I'm having my trips, I'm mainly judging or I'm mainly doing seminars, which are not so much involving me to be in my best shape or to perform whatever it is. Yeah. So I can be just over there physical and do the mental part, not so much the physical part. Yeah. Like the sport part. So yeah, I'm thinking it that way. And around December and January over there, this time, probably I'll start my first steps into the skills slowly. I also talked with a few guys from our sport that had similar injuries, for example, like Josef Moro or Vitaly Fechuk, that had similar injuries. So just to gain a little bit more experience of how, how the process is going, how fast it's get healed and so on, because it's always good to ask somebody who has already went through that path. Mm-hmm.
That's a big, big learning. That's the reason, one of the reasons of this podcast. But it's also something I would definitely recommend to everyone is exchanging more with people, who already did the thing you want to do. Same with your coaching. If you really have the goal to go all in with your calisthenics career and become a really athlete with a good structure, and working with your advantages, but also with your disadvantages, it makes so much sense to look out for a coach, who already went through the things that you're aiming for. So yeah, it's just good for me to see that even a Viktor Kamenov, you know, like the legend, the Stenics legend, is also like seeking for help and for other opinions and experiences, because it's just a shortcut. It's just a shortcut on, and you know more specifically what you do, what things help in this situation.
Yeah, since you said shortcut, you always need to bring your ego down, because if you feel that you know everything, you're the god, that's actually the biggest shortcut to injuries and, you know, big problems. So you need to bring your ego down and to be open-minded. to be accepting a lot of opinions, a lot of experience from the other people, because you always can gain more experience. Yeah. Doesn't matter if you're the world champion, doesn't matter if you're one of the strongest athletes, you can always get good lessons from other people and also from your own mat.
That's true. And that's what you rarely see from, or like, yeah, it's just important. I think it's, let's keep it like this.
Yeah.
You talked about that the injury happened during ring training. You're a fan still of training rings. I hope this relation between rings, like this injury, didn't change the relation between you and rings.
Yeah, I'm still in love with them, even though we already have a small conflict. But yeah.
So maybe you can tell us about the benefits, or like, what do you like about ring training? Why is it so beneficial for you?
You know, one of the things is that ring training or the rings in general, if you're, of course, at home, you can always get them with you. You can hang them on a tree. You can hang them on different places. I mean, it's really, it has a good utility, let's say it that way. Yeah. Something else is that they're suspended freely, which means that you need to activate your body in a little bit different way. Like, you need to activate all your body. For example, the glutes, the chest, it's way more unstable, which makes it also harder as an execution. And just because of this, I'm always recommending people first to go through other grips before going for rings. Yeah. And basically, that's one of the reasons that I'm going over there. Just I found over there a way to lift my static game over. Yeah, but of course, over here, it's important to say that performing skills on the rings doesn't always mean that those skills are harder, because it depends on how it's performed on the rings. Because on the rings, you can see a lot of gymnastics, gymnasts who are, let's say, locking over there in a lot of skills. Yeah, which compared to, let's say, ground or P-bars, where the static exercise is executed properly, can be definitely way easier compared to the ground and the P-bars. Yeah, so it's important also how it's executed. But let's say if you have the same execution on P-bars and rings, definitely the rings will give a little bit more points above. Also, as a judging, if I need to judge both of the elements and if see really similar execution, then definitely rings go in front.
Mm-hmm. But still, you say rings are, yeah, they are harder. So you would recommend to someone, yeah, unlocking and improving his straddle planche to first master it on parallels and then go to rings.
Yeah, definitely. That's a better case. That's a, let's say, safer way. That's a safer way. Yeah, the same thing also for dips. I mean, if you're not able to make two dips on a regular, parallels, then it will be way harder and risky to go directly on the rings. Yeah, I remember my first training on rings. I was so strong without the rings, but when I went just on a regular support, nothing else but just support, I started like shaking. Yeah, so you definitely see. Yeah, you see the difference. The difference is so big. Yeah,
it's true. I always think it's so cold in the gym when I see people shivering, but then I realize, oh, they are doing ring training and they are just shaking from the ring exhaustion.
Also something else, it gives way more freedom. For example, you can have a better range of motion for a certain skills. You have the freedom of rotating your grip. For example, when you're on the P-bars, you're fixed over there. You have the possibility to adjust the height of the rings. You can make them higher or you can make them shorter, which of course also makes a difference. I mean, the shorter it is, the easier it is, and that's why it's important to also, when you're judging, when I'm judging, to also see those little things. And you can't compare an Olympic performance on Olympic rings to a performance that is with rings that are, for example, 10 or 15 centimeters tall.
Your favorite elements on rings?
Definitely have favorites. Van Gerder, I like a lot Van Gerder, which is back lever to full planche. Butterfly or Balandin, it's called Balandin because of a Russian athlete who is called Alexander Balandin, which is basically from here to a cross to support. And it's usually this has also some connections with the Maltese. You can make it, for example, to Maltese, not to a support. You can do it to an inverted cross. There are a lot of new also elements over there that are mainly transitions. I like a lot of transitions, not only static, because the statics are, there are several statics. You know, they're Maltese, it's full planche, it's Victorian, it's cross, it's the inverted cross, but it's about the connections that you're making between those static sets. It makes the game, especially that makes the difference in a new gymnastics between the top gymnasts and those who are, you know, average. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah, I just have to remember, I think it was a photo in our calendar, in our wall calendar, where you had like the inverted cross in the handstand, which was like super impressive for me. How did you learn the advanced ring skills?
By first mastering them on P-bars and floor, definitely. 2015, I remember having my first Maltese on ground, which was around 6-7 seconds. We can consider that having 8 seconds is already learned skill. And then after that, I went on the rings. Yeah, that's my approach. Of course, there are some other athletes that went a little bit different way. Yeah, but that's my approach.
And you also trained them in a gymnastics gym with a foam pit below?
I trained in 2 gymnastic gyms. The first one is the one that is the most known, where all the Bulgarians are training. It's already a little bit crowded, so that's why I'm, you know, trying to rarely go there. And we have another gymnastics gym that is for the nationals. Also over there, only the professionals have been also over there training, over there talking with a lot of coaches and professionals and, you know, gaining experience.
It's the one where you did your comparison, like what was the 10-year evolution?
You watch it. I went there the last year and I tried to make the same skills on the same place, on the same spot, and to see the difference. And for sure, it was a big difference. And you see that this progress is a result of small steps each year. Like each year, I was progressing a little bit. It's not like for 1 year, I get all the skills. And it's important, whatever you're progressing in your life, to look it that way in a long term and to be sure that each year you're upgrading a little bit, because it's risk reward. It's always risk reward. The more reward you get, the bigger risk you have. And that's why you see also other athletes who got hardly injured, who disappeared for a long time, who just risk it a little bit more. Just like they say, risk it for a biscuit. So better don't risk it for a biscuit, do it. Do it slowly and do it thoughtful. You have all the time, especially if you're 15, you have all the time. If you're 25, you still have all the time. That's what I'm telling myself. Yeah,
it's true. And patience is such a rare skill in today's society and today in our generation. It's so rare. People are so impatient. They want to do things tomorrow. We get so many messages. Next year, I will become world champion. You will see, they are so impatient.
Yeah, because for so many outside things that are influencing, you see only the social medias and all those videos that are just 5 seconds and, making them scroll like crazy. Not being patient to watch even 10-second video. Like people I see, they can't even watch one movie already. It's too long. It's too boring. They want something faster. They want all the information to come faster. And all that thing also affects you, the character, overall character, and goes to the trainings. That's why we see some athletes affected by that. And some athletes having this type of approach in their trainings. Yeah, not warming up, going directly for hard skills. Looking at some guy on Instagram, let's say a world champion doing this and or that, and he's saying, okay, let's go directly for that. I'm going to skip the planche. Yeah, definitely. These are important things to mention. An important problem in our society, as you said.
And in our sport, concerning injuries. Yes. Because, as you said, risk-reward ratio is like the risk of getting injured if you, I don't know, what is your opinion? What is the perfect days per week to work out? Is it enough to do 3-4 workouts? Is it important if you want to get to the top to do 7 workouts per week or like even twice a day, like many people say?
First depends on the level. We need to talk for what level we're having in mind. So if we're talking about beginner, a guy who has never done anything, I would say 3 times a week is totally fine, because they need a lot of time to recover from a training to a training. All that soreness, you know, just the first steps are really hard and they need to go through that pain, and they need to also emotionally take the fact that they're starting with something new, let's say that way. But for more advanced athletes, I think 5 times a week, something like this, is totally fine. I will not suggest going for 7 times a week for several reasons. And the most important is that you can't recap yourself unless you're on steroids. You can go for 7 times a week. I was with 7 times a week, but I can say that all those were with a high intensity. So, for example, I had 2 days which I was considering them as a rest day, which were just really light trainings that were with a 10% intensity compared to the other trainings. So that's a good way to go for, because those little days will keep you engaged and will make your body not sleep. Because I've been in a situation, for example, when I'm traveling and I'm judging and all these kind of things, and I hardly find a time to do those little activational parts, and I'm not training for 2-3 days. Then when I come back to the training, I feel like I'm strong, but I'm missing the activation. Like I can't engage all my body simultaneously. I'm having no synchron between the different activations. Yeah, so I need some more time to, let's say, to warm up and so on. So that's why it's important. Like even in a rest day, be sure that you're doing some light work, whether it will be plank, whether it will be posterior pelvic tilt position, whether it will be planche leans, whether it will be some weight work, like just some positions that are imitating the static skills or whatever skills that you want to deal with. But to be sure that you're doing something, you're doing something, you're not sleeping, you're not watching TV all the time, you're not having your time lazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you train 5 times per week, do you get sore? How do you deal with soreness?
Well, I was in a situation in which I was not getting that much sore, maybe a little bit, because, after doing statics for, I can say, over 8 years, I was not starting from the beginning, but I started really feeling like a god for some skills. For example, for Maltese, I started feeling that I can do every day and I'll not have any soreness. You know, it's just a skill that I was really getting used to. And in comparison to a legs training, because after I injured myself, right now I'm focusing more on legs workout. Yes. Yeah. But I feel that after just a really light training that is nothing compared to my trainings for upper body, I need 3 days to recover. You see the difference? Mm-hmm. It's so much different because I was not used to those type of trainings. Yeah. I was always doing legs, but this time I'm just focusing a little bit more on the legs. Yeah.
So it's all about routine and getting used to the workload and the exercises.
Yeah, and when I'm talking about legs, you see, we're going back to the topic of looking at the things positive, and whatever situation you are bad, you need to look at it as a possibility to start something new. So in my case, it was this. You see, you need to take it as an advantage, nothing else to do. Yeah,
that's true. So soon we will not see you only benching 130, 140 kg, but also squatting. So you're becoming more like a power lifter now.
Oh, you know, it has never been my aim or something that I really wanted. Yeah, but why not? Why not put it in the inventory? Yeah.
For me, your bench press is really impressive, like considering your weight and seeing that the elite bench presses, let's call them, they are really heavy and they often have like a belly, the powerlifting belly, as I call it. Yeah. But, like considering your weight, that's crazy. Like what is your bench, one rep max?
140 on almost 67-8 kilograms, something like this.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So it's almost twice the weight. But I also put a lot of effort over there. It was not coming just from calisthenics. I also put a lot of effort. I was training bench press for three years, but not so much consistency, one time a week, but still enough to get to this type of results.
Mm-hmm. Did it help you with your planche progress?
That's a really, really interesting and common question. People ask me so much about it, but I'll not make so much connections between those two skills. I'll give an example. 2017 was the time in which I already had a strong planche. I already had 36 seconds of a full planche, and I went to the gym and I had 100 or 90 something bench press. So you see, it was nothing so much impressive. Of course, it influenced somehow. Of course, it had some pluses. It gave some pluses for the bench press, but I can say I put it a lot of effort after that to really bring it to 140. And in order to really compare it, we need to look at the position of the body when performing both of the skills. So in a planche, you have a protraction. While in a bench press, you have a retraction. You open your chest. So basically, the two moves, even though they both are push, they're really different. So they don't have so much connection. And that's why they're also not helping each other so much. You can be a really strong plancher, but still be weak in a bench press. And I've seen a lot of guys who are really strong in a planche, but who are already benching 90. Yeah, which 90 is still a lot if we consider the average person. Yeah.
Is it the same thing with planche push-ups? Because it's like more the movement. Are there people you mean, who are really good in planche push-ups, full planche push-ups, for example, but they are weak in bench press?
Yeah, of course. Because in a planche push-up, if you're especially performing them with protraction all the time, because there are two ways to do a planche push-up. Many say this is wrong or this is right. You can't say if it's wrong or right. You can say which one is harder or easier. But the most common way that you see planche push-ups are done is by keeping the protraction all the time. So when you're down in your lowest point, you're having a protraction. When you're in your highest point, you're still having a protraction, which is exactly the opposite of the bench press, where all the time over there with a retraction. Yeah, you can also perform the planche push-ups by protracting on the top and retracting yourself in the bottom. But that means that you need to make one additional move, which is the transition between the retraction to protraction somewhere hidden inside the push-up. That's something that a lot of people are not having, in fact, and are really not looking at it, but it's a really great factor.
And is the bench press anyways an exercise which you would recommend to calisthenics athletes to supplement their workout with? Or is it just because you like it and you enjoy
it? Not at all. You know, you can always add it, even if it's not helping yourself directly. If it helps you mentally just to desertify your trainings and to really put something more interesting into your trainings, then go for it. Because sometimes there are things that are not directly affecting your goals, but they're helping you just because you start feeling better. You know, you're not getting bored from planche, because if you're totally focused on planche, it doesn't mean that you get stronger in a planche. You know, sometimes you need to be sure that you're having some things that are making the training program a little bit more interesting, whether it's dynamics, whether it's some fitness work, whether it's legs, whether it's even something outside the sport. Mm-hmm.
So this is more about enjoying and not losing consistency, not losing the fun.
And also this topic leads me to something else, which is don't be dependent on one thing. So for example, if you're having a lot of hobbies, or you, for example, like doing legs, or you have a lot of interest. When you're in a situation like this in which you can't perform your planche anymore, you're not going to be that. You're not going to be totally dismotivated. It's like sitting on a chair that has only one leg or sitting on a chair that has four or even more legs. And I recommend having a lot of legs, because if you have only one leg, you'll be unable to be planching and you'll be not sure where you're going in your life. That's why you need to have a lot of broad interest in life, whether it's even whether it's only sport interest, whether it's outside the sport, like even a lot of goals, in order to be sure that you're not gonna risk it all. Yeah,
it's true. It's definitely true. And for example, not falling into depression with such an injury is really important, because if you depend your whole life on and your identity is I am the planche man, you know, as it could be with you, but you also have the coaching, you also have more things in life, which is really important in such a situation. On the other hand, I see a lot of people, it's this the question, in my opinion, are you a generalist or are you a specialist? A lot of people out there have difficulties on choosing for one path. Like we talked already in the beginning, that choosing for one path in some point in life is important. When you're 40, let's say, you should have found your path in life, and you should know what you're going after and where you put your focus on.
Yeah, but it's important to also not go for too many legs of the chair. So if you know what I mean. Because it's getting to the other problem that we discussed earlier. Because if you have a lot of things that you're doing, you're basically not a specialist into any, and you can't be the best at any. So what I meant is more like, okay, my direction is sport, but I'm not mainly dependent on my sport performance. I'm not gain money mainly from competing, because if I got that thing mainly from competing, I'm just finished. You know, you need to be sure that you're having a lot of let's say, sort of interest, sort of income, just to be desertified among different things. Mm-hmm. But not too much desertified. Yeah, it always has its own borders. Yeah, its own borders.
That's true. Nice. Yeah, interesting topic so far. We have some new idea. It's called facts or fake. So fact or fake. So basically, I'm saying a statement, and then you have to say, is it a fact for you or is it a fake?
Okay, let's go.
And I'm starting.
You want it to say fast? You want to say it fast, true or false, or I can go in more details?
No, you can go in more details. It's okay. No speed.
Okay. Because it's really hard sometimes to say if it's true or not, because it depends. So you need to add.
That's true. It's like extremist. Like, I don't know. It's not all the things I will say. Maybe they are not all. Maybe they are true, fake or fact, but it's, I know you. I know that you always see the positive. Everything in life has positive and negative things. So nothing is black or white, but let's kick off. The most important planche for planche are strong shoulders.
I would say it's a function of a lot of muscles. You can't say it's the most important. Also, shoulders. I mean, if you look at the mechanics of the shoulders, it's way more complicated than just saying, okay, shoulder is just one muscle. Yeah. But if you think about it, shoulder is the part that is the most far away from the weight center, which means that is the one that is the most vulnerable. Yeah. And that's why you see a lot of guys are getting injured just like me. Yeah. But I would say that for planche, it's more important, you know, how overall you're working with your own muscle. You know, it's a function of a lot of muscles. For example, you have activation of core, you have glutes activation. Even glutes are having part into the planche. You have your back in order to make the protraction. You have a lot of, you need to have developed back muscles. You need to everything. Be sure that you're activating at one time. And I see that sometimes people are, for example, lacking of that thing. They need a little bit more time to, let's say, activate the posterior pelvic tilt, but they're having a good protraction or the opposite thing and so on. So, yeah, it's about all body parts to be working together simultaneously. It's like soldiers. You're having soldiers that they all need to work. Yeah, you may have one really strong soldier, let's say the shoulder, but if it's only him, it's not gonna really work. Mm-hmm. And if you only count on that shoulder, then you increase the risk of injuring it. Mm-hmm.
That's true. Okay, so is there a pattern that you see? Because if I think of the planche, for example, I see that there are thousands, tens of thousands of young calisthenics athletes, beginners out there who are stuck with their tuck planche, which doesn't have a good protraction. And they sometimes try a straddle planche, but they can't extend the legs. They fall into the shoulder. So it's like a prototype, like, I don't know, a stereotype. That's the right word. A stereotype that I have in my head. Like,
well, first, after the planche, there is no need to go darkly for a straddle planche. That's one of the things. I mean, it's a really fast progression. It depends on your body. I mean, if you're a taller guy, then definitely you need to go slower between progression and progression. If you're shorter, if you're lighter, you see that guys are often skipping really fast the progression and they're still somehow making it. Yeah, but even if you're having the best physics, it's important really to have that thing in mind. And, you know, you have your own speed. Yeah. Other problem is that you said it, they're not having a good protraction into the planche and they go for the progressions after. So you're still not done with a certain progression and you're going for a progression after that. You're hardly holding the planche for 4 seconds with a protraction and you're expecting yourself to be doing advanced tuck for 3 seconds with a good protraction. There is no way, there is no logical way that thing to happen. So you need to be sure that you're laying down really good foundation before that thing. You're having that tuck planche for around 8 seconds. You're having a good form over there, good protraction, good activation. And then after that, the chance to hold it with, again, a decent form, with a little bit more open body is bigger. Then after that, it's one of the reasons why so many people are also stuck in a tuck planche is that they're doing only tuck planche. They're not doing all those complementary additional exercises that usually gymnastics are doing into the big sport that are more for the activation of the core of the glutes, like all the parts that are down that are usually sleeping in a tuck planche. Because in a tuck planche, Mainly what we're focusing over there is protraction and keeping that angle between the arms and the upper body as big as possible. Yeah, and that's another reason, you know. So first, inconsistency. And the other thing is just too much concentration on that thick planche and not doing anything additional to that thing. Yeah. And the third thing is just needs time. It requires time. For some people, it just requires more time than others. Yeah.
Would you say you have been lucky with your genetics, with your physique?
Yeah, I don't want to complain about anything. I mean, in this life, you need to be grateful for whatever it is. So even if I was 2 meters high, I would still tell you that I'm grateful that, you know, at least I have two hands, you know. But yeah. Definitely, I have a better genetics than many guys taller than me and, let's say, heavier than me. But also, I know guys that are with better genetics than me. So, yeah, but, you know, it's not about only this thing. It's about how you proceed with the progress, because you can have way better genetics. I've seen so many good guys with a good genetics, with a good future on the playground, even like 7-8 years ago, and they went to several injuries and you know, lack of motivation, and they stopped way before me, and even they had a better body composition than me, you know, they didn't continue. Mm-hmm.
So consistency, structure, making some thoughts, analyzing, listening to your body. All these things play into account, I think.
Yeah, and it's important, something else, not only to say those things and say, okay, I know them, but actually to make them. Yeah. Or to even write them on your wall. You know, behind my bed, I have written some things, especially after the injury. You know, this and this and this, like this thing always to be in front of you and to be sure that it's working here. You know, because we're often saying, okay, bro, I know that I need to warm up, or I know that I need to have a consistent training program. Yeah, but, you know, there is a difference between knowing and applying. Mm-hmm.
That's true. And if I appreciate something about you, I mean, there are multiple things, but you're like really a doer, and you're somebody who is making things. And I know you're not just talking, but you're finishing the things that you say. And I think this is also part of your success in the sport, not only in coaching and our project.
Thanks for that, man. Thanks for that. You know, I'm trying. Sometimes happens problems like this one over here. But I even thought recently that, okay, it's a really bad injury, but I've been training 11 years. So for 11 years, that's the only injury that I had, like a really big one. Yeah, it could be better if I had no injury at all. But if I was training in a way more superior way, I should have had that injury way earlier.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Okay, next, fake. Calisthenics is gymnastics for weak people.
Well, I would say another way. Calisthenics is an alternative for people who hasn't been doing gymnastics before, but they always want it. I would say it that way. It's not for weak people, because what it means, weak. Weak mentally, weak physically. Weak physically. If it's physically, I would not say weaker physically, because we have a lot of athletes in our sport that are even stronger than majority of the gymnasts, because gymnasts are strong on the rings. If you take the other gymnasts on the other, for example, floor, other equipment, or high bar over there, you see that they're having different qualities than strength. You see, they're having agility, they're having endurance, they're having technique over there. So I'll definitely not use the word strong or weak, whatever it is. Yeah, but I would say it's alternative for a lot of people who has always wanted to make something similar to gymnastics, who have seen themselves to be talented in area like gymnastics, but it's already too late. Because I remember I was 2014-15, I was already 16 years old, and I wanted to start doing gymnastics, by the way. Yeah, but all the coaches were telling me, man, it's too old, it's too late, because your flexibility, everything, like technique, like till that age, you should have had way more qualities that you're not having. Like, where have you been sleeping? Why haven't you been training earlier? Yeah. And I said, okay, you see, then I'll go calisthenics. I win it there. Yeah, I'll become way stronger. Yeah. And I made it another way, you see. It's an alternative. And I think it's way better, because you always need to compare apples with apples. So, you know, if I went to gymnastics, the possibilities of having really high results was going to be way less. For example, compare it with Chinese guys who's been training from 3 years old, who has the crazy technique, crazy flexibility, mobility, and everything, you know, coaches and so on. While in our sport, I'm more like comparing to people who are with the same history like me, the same destiny. Yeah.
So my question would be, would you be at a higher level? Imagine a coach when you have been when you were 16 would have said, "Yeah, Victor, let's go into coaching. I will coach you." Would you be at a higher level today, or at a lower level, or just different? How would it look like with your same history?
You mean if I started coaching earlier?
If you started taking the gymnastics coach at 16, if someone
16.
Would have said,
yeah. You never know. You never know. It's hard to say these assumptions, but for sure, I don't think I was going to be the best gymnast on the ranks just because of all those additional skills that you need to have different from the statics itself. Yeah, I can be really strong on the rings in statics, but if I'm lacking of some other qualities, then it's really hard to get to the gold. For example, Yuri Van Gelder, you know, many guys are, you know, admiring him. I'm also admiring him. But for example, he's a guy who is really strong in the static game. But he was not the best into, let's say, the dismount in the end. He was not the best into the little swings that he needs to do in between the rings workout, the static elements, yeah, and so on. So in the end, it's just a sum of all the things that you've been doing all your set. And if you have a really strong static, it's still not going to make the scores that you need to actually get for the gold. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Next, fact or fake? Ankle weights are a great tool to improve your statics.
Ankle weights are a great tool to make a static harder while in the same time make your, let's say, path to the workout place pretty convenient in order not to wear too much weight. Yeah, but if I need to choose between ankle weights or a weight that I can put around my weight center, I'll always go for the ones that are around the weight center because I'm actually... by putting them on the weight center, I'm keeping the same proportion between the back and the front. Yeah. And if I put them on my ankles, then it means that slowly I'll shift my weight center slower, lower also. Yeah. And that will lead to a little bit different angle between the arms and the upper body and so on. Yeah. But sometimes, you know, we don't have a option at all. And it's better just to put some ankle weights in your back, in your pocket, and go off to train. That's also an option, yeah. But if we need to look at really way more professional, all those equipment that are making your execution harder or easier, they need to be acting on your weight center. You know, Dream Machine, that's actually helping you to make the exercise easier. Resistant band, the resistant band that... we're often using on the bars outside. We're positioning them on the weight center around the belly. Weights that are making the opposite thing. They're making the skills harder. Also, if it's possible to put them with a belt. And you can put the belt, you can put those ankle weights on the belt. That's something that I did before. So you can still, let's say, go for weights, but you can put one belt and you can put those ankle weights on the belt. And then after that, you have really, really good effect. Of course, it will be not so much harder as putting it on the legs because the lower it is, the harder it is. Yeah, but it will have a little bit better effect on you know, keeping that proportion between front and back weights.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Fact or fake? Every calisthenics athlete should use protein powder.
What your goals are? I mean, you want to get bigger, you want to get back to a shape, recover really good. Or you want to make statics. So in my case, right now, I'm not only protein powder, I'm also getting some supplements in order really to get my recovery faster. But, you know, if you don't have your goal to really be bigger or to put some mass and so on, I personally believe that you can get a lot of the things naturally from the food. But also depends on the age. The older you get, the more... outside things you need to to get from the food source, yeah. Again, it depends. Like in, as I said, in my case, for example, I'm getting collagen, magnesium, and vitamin C, and also some other supplements. Yeah, that will help me. Yeah, and also I feel like after recovering, I'll still continue with some of them. Yeah, because as I said, with the age, it's good to actually get some additional help. Yeah. So in general, it depends on the goal. If you want to get bigger, for sure. Also, it's important to look at the protein source of, you know, whether it's a good protein source, because some supplements are a lot of marketing and you don't know what's inside in it. So if you need to choose between a lot of protein with uncertain, how it's called?
Ingredients,
let's say that way, or less protein, but from a place that, but you know that they're good quality, better go for less, because health is in front of everything else.
That's true. And longevity, same with patients again, same with steroids and stuff. A lot of people sacrifice long-term health and longevity, like living a long, fulfilled life for short-term gains.
Also, protein powder, we talk about what amount. Because there have been so many studies and they're controversial. Like, you need this amount of protein or you need more or less, and how much you can actually absorb, your body can absorb. And a lot of studies are influenced by the marketing and by the industry. So, you know, it's a topic that is really deep, and it probably deserves a whole podcast.
Sure. But in general, I would be interested in this. How do you deal with having two different facts? Like, how do you decide to go for one? Because there are so many things where you have different opinions from athletes, different studies who say the exact opposite things. How do you find for yourself in life the right source of the truth?
That's a really good question. Well, the first thing is to look at as many sources if possible. For example, my current situation with the injury, what I did, I went to 5 doctors. Yeah, a lot of them told me that they can't make the surgery because of the vacation, as I told you, but all of them told me that I need to make a surgery. So if 5 doctors are telling you this, then it means that you definitely need to make it. Yeah. So the same thing, like, yeah, of course you can go for the studies or for whatever we're talking. I mean, you can apply that thing in many other parts in life, yes, but you definitely need to look at a lot of source, a lot of information, and to sort yourself, like, not to look at only one source and say, okay, that is it. Yeah. And the other thing is, look at the professionals, look at those who are actually better than you, and see how they made it. For example, if you really admire really top athletes over there, that is making it all, that has never been injured, that is making all the gains, you just start seeking for what is his way. Okay, maybe for him this was working. Okay, go for another athlete, see how the things are going. Like, be skeptical for whatever people are telling you, and be sure that you're having a lot of opinions, a lot of information that you can put on the table, and in the end decide. That is it, how you can deal with whatever problem in life. And the good thing is that whatever we're talking in this podcast, it's also can be applied in whatever it is. I mean, the injury, yeah, that's a bad situation, but you can have really bad situation in also other aspects, whether it's a relationship, whether it's family, whether it's work, whether it's finance, whether it's health, whether it's sports. You see, you need to, there's some principles that you always follow. Principles.
Mm-hmm. Nice. If you are really strong in planche, if you can do a full planche, you can also do a full front lever.
No. Well, no, for sure. And a good instance for that is so many strong gymnasts on the rings that are barely holding a front lever because they don't need it. They've never been doing a front lever. Yeah. I mean, the mechanics are totally different between the two moves. You have first pulling movement, then you have a pushing movement. You have a scapula, different scapula position. You have retraction, you have protraction. Yeah. Maybe also there's some, certainly there are some connections, you know, like the glutes engagement, the core engagement, there are some connections. And for sure, if you're doing a front lever, it will help you way more in a planche than not doing it at all, than not doing any. Yeah. But there are different skills, and I'll not make so much big connection between both of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last fact or fake, leg workouts destroy your statics progress.
Legs workout? We're going back to the topic of the front and back ratio of the weight, because it's really similar to the ankle weights. The stronger weights you legs you have, the more you go to the same training, like you're using weights on your ankles, because you're shifting your weight center lower and lower. Yeah. So from a physical point of view, it should be actually harder. Yeah. But also there are some other studies that are saying that it's overall increasing your testosterone, which is benefiting for your man's strength. So if you're training legs, it can also benefit for your upper part of the body. Yeah. And if you get stronger in your upper part of the body, in fact, the minus that you get from just having a stronger legs can be subtracted with the plus that is coming with those gains in the upper body and overall increasing your testosterone. But it's subjective over here, but I'll say for sure, if you have really big legs, it will be hard for you to go for a plunge. I've seen so many guys, for example, free runners or people who've been for a long time in a gym with really, really big weights on their legs. Majority of the weight is in the lower part of the body. I see how they're struggling in the beginning. A better option is to be a little bit more balanced and to slowly getting into, let's say, the planche. And once you get stronger in the planche, then after that, start going for legs. That's a little bit better way, better approach. Because as a beginner with a really heavy legs, it will be really a struggle. Yeah. It is how it is. I've seen it. Mm-hmm.
So I hope next time we see each other that I will recognize you. I hope that your legs will not double the size, but yeah.
That's a good joke. Hopefully not triple the size. yeah, definitely. Just for some small conditioning. Yeah. And shifting the focus for a while.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. One last topic. We were just talking about it for fun, having a fun discussion in the office. But question, who would win in a Burning Gate statics competition? You in your prime or Daniel Christoph in his current state? Who would win the competition?
Well, for Burning Gate, he will win because of the completeness.
Okay.
Yeah. Because when we're saying who is stronger, that's a really common question people ask. Okay, who is stronger? We need to be more specific on what we mean. Yeah, bench for press. Example, for a bench press or a front lever or, yeah, but in majority of the time, we're talking about completeness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you can have a stronger planche or a stronger front lever, but if another guy is way more complete than you, then he will win. Or we can have two guys that are almost equally complete. Then we come with the other factor, which is who is the guy who has more endurance than the other guy. Yeah. You see, you can be stronger in the beginning of the training than one guy, but just after 10 minutes, your strength will go down. Yeah, which is really important for a competition. Yeah, but fast answer to this question, he'll win because of the completeness. Yeah, but because of his front lever.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thanks for clarifying. I will tell that to the others.
yeah, it's important. Yeah, but don't forget, next year is coming. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish you just the best that everything works smoothly with reattaching the biceps, that everything goes well.
Thank you, man. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to make a chat with you.
Yes. All the best. Thanks for your time. And we stay in touch, Victor.
Thank you, man. Thank you. See you.